everybody, welcome to another episode of the Geek New Wave podcast. My name is Nick Maddox, and I'm joined today, as always, by my co-host, Joe Salas.
What up, nerds?
And Wes Reynolds.
Hello, all.
Also today, we're joined by a very special guest, Peter Parsley.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be here.
Awesome. We're happy to have you.
You're happy to have you.
Great.
So, for those of you who are listening for the first time, just, you know, we are the Geek New Wave podcast. We kind of talk about everything and anything that is geek-related. We typically start off each show by talking about some geek news that's happened throughout the week. Then we're going to move on to what we've been geeking out about, which is just us kind of talking about what we've been reading or watching or anything else throughout the week. And then we're going to move on to a full discussion of this week's movie, which is Super 8. So we hope that you enjoy the show. We're going to move right into the geek news of the week. So the first thing that we wanted to talk about was writers. A new set of writers were officially hired to write a new live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Oh, God be praised.
Radical, man. Excited.
Cowabunga.
No, this is really kind of exciting. The movie is being produced by Michael Bay's production company. So
Platinum Dunes,
and they're saying that they want it to have like an epic Transformers feel, which I mean, like, just the thought of like an epic Ninja Turtles movie, like, I mean, the story might suck because it's Michael Bay, but like visually, like, if he has something to do with it, I think it has potential to just be incredible. Well, I don't know what you guys think.
You will definitely be seeing probably Crane.
Yeah, we might see Crane
and that huge big
Technodrome.
Like, the Technodrome.
Have they said if is it going to be live action or is it going to be like TMNT?
It's going to be live action. There's also a new cartoon that's going to be on Nickelodeon like within the next year.
Which
is going to be a live action movie.
I hope it'd be so cool if they actually brought back cool turtle suits instead of having CG turtles.
Yeah, and good suits too, not like the bad ones toward the end there.
Yeah,
like they get really like the first movie, like,
don't you dare say anything bad about Turtles.
The first movie they look amazing.
Yeah,
and then like the third one they kind of got really bad.
The third one they gave them freckles. Yeah. They turned into Morgan Freeman. It was weird.
Turtles in Time is a good movie.
It's an awful movie.
But yeah, so these new writers that were hired, their names are Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec. I think I'm pronouncing that right. But, yeah, they just finished writing the new Mission Impossible movie, Mission Impossible 4 Ghost Protocol, which I'm hearing a lot of good things about. But other than that, they really haven't done anything movie-wise. They've done a lot of TV shows. Like, they wrote for Alias and, like, Felicity and stuff. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily...
All those Felicity fans are going to be flocking to Ninja Turtles.
The plot's going to just be turtles dealing with situations.
Dealing with...
emotional problems.
Yeah, it's just going to be teenage angst. It's going to be the Twilight version of Ninja Turtles.
The Transformers epic feel.
Yeah. I really hope not, but hopefully Ghost Protocol, the new Mission Impossible movie, is awesome, and then that will get us even more excited for Ninja Turtles.
I mean, TMNT was really good. I'm always going to be on board for a turtle movie. I was shocked at how good that was.
Yeah, the action in that was awesome.
Yeah, I liked that movie a lot.
And I think that we could all agree that in that movie, Casey Jones was voiced by Chris Evans. And yeah. I think Chris Evans would be a great live-action Casey Jones, too.
Oh, absolutely.
But yep. Maybe after Captain America, that won't.
He should just play every superhero from here on out.
Pretty much.
Every hero.
Pretty much. Cool. So that's the Ninja Turtles news. And finally, Joe has a little bit of comic news that he wanted to announce.
Oh, yeah. Just for, you know, talk about what we talked about last show with the DC reboot. All 52 titles have been released, so we all know what that's going to be.
Where can you find those?
You can find them DC.com.
DC.com.
You can find them on Bleeding...
Bleeding Cool.
BleedingCool.com. They have the whole entire list there. So you got all 52 titles. So you got Batman, Detective Comics, Superman, and you get all to see all the creators and writers. Marvel has decided to shake up their comic book line with canceling Uncanny X-Men, which is one of their longest like comic book runs. It's been around for quite some time. They're ending it. There's some X-Men event going on right now. I'm not too sure what, but they're going to decide to end Uncanny X-Men at issue 544, I believe it is. It's the final issue. And also Marvel said that in this next coming week, they're going to have a huge, big announcement, you know,
Ooh, are they rebooting their entire line too?
I think maybe. Stay tuned
next week where I'm sure we'll talk about it. So cool, just a little bit of comic bits there. You can check out Marvel.com, DCComics.com, or BleedingCool.com for all that information. So that's going to bring us out of our geek news section and bring us straight into our what have we been geeking out about section. So this is where we kind of talk about stuff that we've been watching, listening to, reading, geeking out about. Why don't we go to Peter, our special guest, first. What have you been geeking out about this week, Pete?
There's a new show on Comedy Central, and it airs right after South Park at 10:30, and it's called Workaholics. And I was a little skeptical about it, and I was thinking, okay, this is going to be just another, like, won't even go on for a season before it gets dropped show. It's kind of a dead spot for a lot of shows that get on Comedy Central, but this is rather addicting, and, like, the three characters you fall in love with, like, immediately. And it's basically these three nerds who all live together, and they all work in the same office as telemarketers. They're fresh out of college, but they're, like, really out of place at their job. But most of it takes place outside of the office, and they just get caught up in the most, like, unspeakable things. Like, I highly recommend it to anybody that hasn't seen it. I highly doubt that, you know, if you're a fan of, like, you know, South Park and a lot of shows like that, that you'll be turned off by Workaholics. It's really the best show to air after South Park since the Upright Citizens Brigade its spot there. Yeah, and I mean, that's saying a lot, I would think. But
yeah, it is true. Basically, every show in the past that's been after South Park has been gone.
Yeah. That's cool. I haven't seen it. Has anyone else watched it?
I've watched the first episode. It's hilarious. It is. It's kind of funny. I feel like it's kind of like Comedy Central answer to, like, I don't know, I could be off this, but like Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Hmm. Like, kind of the character. Like, it kind of has that, but it's a little bit more edgier. It's funny. The first episode I saw was funny, and I would definitely watch it again.
Cool. Wes, have you seen it yet?
I mean, I saw some of the first episode. I had to say, the commercials turned me off. I thought it just looked like it was going to be really annoying. And then again, I could just be coming off a brilliant show like South Park. It's kind of hard to follow that. So maybe I just wasn't giving it a shot. But I only watched like half the first episode, and I was like, yeah, this is okay. But I just assumed it would get canceled, so why get into it? But I guess I'll have to give it another shot if Parsley says.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to check it out too. Have you been geeking out about anything else, Peter?
That's really been it lately. I mean, aside from what we're going to discuss soon, I suppose.
Cool. So how about Wes? What have you been geeking out about?
If you don't have this, you need to, $8 a month. You need to get Netflix Instant Stream because, I mean, they just keep adding more and more awesome things, like, weekly. And the best things they've been doing lately is putting a lot of TV on Netflix. And right now you can watch every single episode of the original Twilight Zone. Is on there. Did you guys know this?
Yes. I have been watching.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's really cool. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
They have every single episode of The Twilight Zone. They have episodes of The Outer Limits that I haven't gotten into yet, but I'm going to start watching. And they just added Twin Peaks, which I had never seen. And I just finished the first season, and, I mean, this is an amazing show if you have not watched it. I hear the second season's not as good. There's only two seasons, but still, the fact that all of this is just right at your fingertips and you can watch these old classic TV shows, I mean, $8 a month, you gotta do this. Plus, they have every classic Nicktoons on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome sauce.
I've been watching a lot of Hey Arnold lately.
Cool. So, yeah, I definitely recommend anyone who doesn't have Instant Watch to get it. And really, just watch some of the old Twilight Zone episodes because they're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And if you are that big of a fan, you need to pick up the Blu-rays. I bought the first season of Twilight Zone on Blu-ray, and I have the other ones just sitting in my Amazon cart that I'll buy eventually, but the transfers are so good, and the special features on them are fantastic. So if you're a big Twilight Zone fan like me, it's definitely worth picking up.
Cool. So Twilight Zone on Blu-ray and on Instant Watch. Anything else, Wes?
Yeah, this is going to sound a little goofy, but on Instant Stream also, they just added a movie that came out in the year 2000. I hadn't seen it since the movie theater, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to give this another shot, and I was honestly, like, shocked at how much I enjoyed it. Titan A.E.
Oh, I love Titan A.E.
I love that movie.
I remember liking that, yeah.
Titan A.E. is on Instant Stream, and I came across it, and I was like, you know what, I remember this being pretty good. I hadn't seen it in 11 years, but I gave it a shot. I mean, that movie's really, like, the animation style is gorgeous. It looks a lot like The Iron Giant. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the action is really well done. The opening sequence, Earth explodes, the moon gets just hit by pieces of the Earth, and it's going all over the place. Really well done. And it has an awesome voice cast. It has a very young Matt Damon, before he was anybody. It has Drew Barrymore as the love interest, the great President Bill Pullman from Independence Day. And then all the comic relief by the great Johnny Legs, John Leguizamo, Nathan Lane, a small role by Jim Brewer, and then Ron Perlman in a very small cameo in the beginning. And it's from the guy that directed the very first Land Before Time, Don Bluth.
And also written by Joss Whedon.
Really? Yes. I don't remember that.
I mean, if you enjoy sci-fi or you're a Joss Whedon fan or anything like that, you need to give it another watch. It was shocking how good it was.
Really,
I'm going to go pick up the Blu-ray
really
if there
cool
is one.
It's a really cool movie. I think it was probably one of the first 2D animated movies to integrate 3D animation as well. Mm-hmm. Like computer-generated animation. I love Titan A.E. It's on Instant Watch. That's awesome.
Went on there, I think, last week.
I will be rewatching that this week.
Yeah.
Definitely. Cool. Great recommendations. Joe?
A couple months ago, I went out and I purchased the animated Superman cartoon that came out in 1996. The same, like, a little bit right after the Batman animated one. And I've just got around to seeing that and watching it. I forgot how good this show was. Like, it's the great telling of the Superman story. Like, you don't see Superman, like, in the first two episodes, because it's just all on Krypton, it's his origin, and, like, it's, I think it was a great way of taking Superman off the comics and, you know, on the screen, and I think what movies haven't done with the Superman story, because there's just so much, his origin is so big and so epic that no movie could have captured it, like the TV show, and I would also argue that I think it's as good, or it could be a little better, this is my opinion, as the Batman animated show. I know people love that, but I mean, if you haven't watched the Superman show, I go back and watch it. Some of the episodes are awesome. They have great cameos. Like, there's a great episode where he races the Flash. He teams up with Green Lantern. There's the world's finest three-part episodes with him and Batman teaming up to fight Joker and Lex Luthor. It was a great show.
There's also that awesome episode where he has to team up with Lobo.
Oh, yeah, so two-part episode. Fights Lobo, that was awesome. So I think going back and rewatching that, like, was really, really good. And
Did it get a cool release like Batman did? Because I got that awesome, like, leather case of all
it's
of Batman
not,
anime
it,
series.
It didn't, and that's what I'm kind of upset about. They just kind of put all the DVDs in one box and said, here you go. Like, because they did it with Batman, they had a really cool case, and they also have a really cool case for Batman Beyond. I feel like they shortchanged the Superman. Because it was good. It was a good show, and it just didn't last long as Batman, I think. Yeah. Or it didn't have that presence.
Yeah, it ran like maybe 50 episodes as opposed to Batman has something like 70, 75 or so.
I really hope that the Spider-Man animated series gets a DVD release soon. Because that one, to me, was just as good as those two.
It actually, if you look, they do sell those seasons separately on DVD on Amazon for relatively cheap.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
You can pick up, I think, like, season one of the Spider-Man the Animated Series is, like, $10 on Amazon.
Well, that's going in my cart.
Yeah, they haven't released a full collection yet, though, which is kind of a letdown. But I also picked up the Superman Animated Series, complete series DVD, and I've been rewatching it, too. It is really good. I don't know if it's better than Batman, but it's definitely on par with that. It's pretty great, I suggest.
Does it have as much style as Batman? Because I remember watching the show, but not as much as a memory.
Yeah,
it's the same animators.
Bruce
both
Tim.
Are produced by Bruce Timm, who's kind of the
Bruce
architect
Tim, awesome.
Of DC's animated series and their animated movies. It's pretty good. Peter, did you ever watch the Superman animated series as a kid?
Not so much. I watched some of the older ones prior to the 90s. I don't know what decade those were from at all. Maybe the 80s or somewhere in there. I have some old ones on VHS.
Yeah.
And the Superman logo is like the letters are in red and then the like font behind it's in blue.
I don't know. Those are like the old, like,
yeah, those
original
like the
cartoons. Like,
yeah,
like
the Max Fleischer.
Yeah, like when like the
Like the 50s.
The animation of those looks
amazing. Yeah, that's why I didn't know what decade it was from. I was like,
if anyone hasn't seen the Fleischer Superman shorts, YouTube them. The animation, it's literally from like the 40s or 50s, but it looks incredible. It's all like hand painted. Like
I think a lot of that is on. They just released the whole new Superman film collection on Blu-ray, and I'm pretty sure a bunch of those are on there.
Like, there's like I remember like one iconic scene where like he grabs like two like electrical poles and like there's lightning striking him, and it just looks it's beautiful. It looks amazing.
No, I totally suggest that you both pick up the new Superman animated series, and at the very least, YouTube some of those Fleischer Superman shorts. They're pretty great. Anything else, Joe?
One more thing, because DC has decided to reboot their entire universe, I've took it upon myself to go back and read some old storylines and stuff like that, and one of the ones that stuck out to me when I was a kid, and I haven't read it in a long time, and I wanted to reread it and see if it still had the same presence as it did, was in 1992 when they decided to kill off Superman, the Death of Superman. So I reread that, and it still holds up today. Like, I just remember being a kid and, like, on the news when they said they're going to kill off Superman. I remember, like, weeping and, like, going to, like, the store and buying that final issue and reading it, and at the end seeing Superman died. Like really, like, as a child, that, like, affected me. And to this day, there's still that presence there. Like, when you read the whole story and you see how he, when he fights Doomsday and the Justice League show up and they get, like, their ass kicked and stuff like that. Like, and then to see, like, after, like, the world without Superman. And just, like, that's the great thing about DC Comics is when they did something like that back in the day, like, there was a presence. So, like, when Superman died, not only did it affect Superman comic books, but it affected the entire universe. So, like, after Superman died, like, soon after Batman got his back broken, that's when Hal Jordan turned evil and became Parallax. So, like, it, like, echoed waves through the DC universe, and it's still good. Like, it's the storyline is still good today, so pick that up.
I love reading that, specifically that last issue of that run where Superman gets killed by Doomsday. Spoiler alert, he dies in the Death of Superman. But that last issue, it's just like the fight. Every there's almost no words. Every panel is just a fight, and it starts off with like four panels per page of the fight, and like as you get deeper and deeper into the story, it just goes to like two panels, and then like
the last issue is all one page.
Yeah,
each page.
Well,
is just
if you read the entire fight, like the very last issue is just like each page is like just a full page spread of the fight, and it's awesome. It's
Hold really on to cool. that one, Joe. That'll be worth money one day.
I'm sure. It probably already is.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm going to move on to what I've been geeking out about this week. I wanted to give a shout out to, this is kind of weird, but I've been listening to a lot of movie scores and soundtracks on using Pandora. For people that don't know, Pandora is a free online internet radio station where you type in what kind of music you want to listen to, and then it will just find stuff for you. And so, like, one day I just typed in, like, John Williams, and it just plays, like, all these, like, classic, like, gems of soundtracks and scores that, like, I would never even think about listening to. Like, and it's just so cool. Like, I'll be sitting there at my computer, and all of a sudden, like, the score for, like, Independence Day will come up, or, like, Braveheart. So, like, anyone who has an appreciation for, like, great film scores, check out Pandora, type in your favorite film composer, and check that out. It's pretty awesome, and it's, like, a good free way to get access to that stuff. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was, a couple weeks ago, I finished reading The Hunger Games trilogy. For those that don't know, The Hunger Games is a series of books for teens, I guess, which kind of threw me off at first, because when I think of that, I think of, like, the Twilight series or books like that. But I kept hearing all about how it was really, really good and I should read it. And then, like, the internet became bombarded with, like, all the casting news for the movie that they're making of it. And I was like, all right, I'll give this a read before the movie comes out, just to see. And I read the first book literally in less than a day. Mm-hmm.
How long is the book? Is it, like, Harry Potter length?
I would say that, like, the first one is comparable in length to the first Harry Potter book. It's probably, like, maybe 200 pages. I don't know. It's a quick read, but the story of the books is it's kind of like a dystopian future where nuclear war is kind of like taken out, like the government as it was, and there's just like colonies spread across the U.S. That are all overrun by one central city that has like almost like a communist government to it, and to keep order within the colonies, the government sets up what is called the Hunger Games, the name of the book, where they have kids like age like 9 to 17 go to this one arena and fight to their death. That's kind of the basic plot of the first book, and I mean it's kind of like Battle Royale or other things like that, but it's really violent. Like you wouldn't think that it is. Like kids die like brutally. Like 9-year-olds die and stuff. So it's kind of like really cool. I'm interested to see how the movie is going to work.
Nick loves it when children die.
I do. It's kind of my favorite thing in the world.
Children in peril.
Yeah. Then I read the second book. That only took me 2 days. It was just as good. The third book, a little bit weaker. I don't know. I'm not going to go into like where the story goes, but I wasn't as into the third book. But overall, I would recommend the trilogy for sure. Has anyone else read any of The Hunger Games?
I've only heard about it, but I haven't read it. I'd like to sit down and read it.
I hate that it's under like the teen novel area because that always turns people off because of things like Twilight. But is there a big love triangle in there that takes over the fact that there's a cool battle going on, or is there? Does it actually weigh itself out?
There is a love triangle, but it isn't. It's not like as overwhelming and just like disgusting to read as the Twilight books are. Like I read Twilight and I read New Moon. And, like, it is just, some of that is just absurd how just, like, overbearing the romance is. It's never overbearing. It never takes away from the story in The Hunger Games. It feels organic and real. Yeah. And I hope that's how the movie is, too.
Are the plans for the movie, are they planning on doing 3 separate movies? Or
apparently they're going to do 4. Wow. I guess they're going to break up the third one like everything does now. But, like, there's nothing about the third book that was... I felt epic enough for it to need 2 movies, but I guess they need to make their money, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I recommend that you guys check out The Hunger Games. Anyone listening, at least read the first one, see if you like it. The movie's going to come out, I think, in March of next year, directed by Gary Ross, who did Seabiscuit and Pleasantville. So, I don't know.
Hey, those are 2 good movies.
Those are 2 good
they
movies.
They are good movies.
So we'll see what happens.
I don't know how he's going to do child murder, though.
Yeah,
I
don't know. That's going to be bizarre.
But, the children will be in black and white. When they get stabbed, they turn to color.
Yeah, so I think that we should probably move on from the what we've been geeking out about section. We're going to move on to a brand new section. From here on out, each episode of the Geek New Wave podcast is going to have a guest host. Today it's Peter Parsley. But yeah, every episode we're going to have a new guest. So we're going to create a new section called the Geek New Wave Geek Peek of the Week. And the way that this section is going to work is that week's guest is going to give me, Wes, and Joe, and all of you listeners something to either watch or read.
Some homework.
Basically some homework. Something to watch or read throughout the week. And then on the following show, we are going to discuss what we thought of it. So for the first ever Geek Peek of the Week, Peter Parsley, what do you want us to watch or listen or read?
Aside from Workaholics, I really do push that. It's going to take a couple episodes to break it in. There was this remix of the Daft Punk soundtrack that came out about 2 months ago, and it has not been getting a lot of attention. And it's, you know, the artwork has gone from that blue font to a green font. And it's just called Tron Legacy Remixed. I think you can pick it up at Best Buy. You can find it on iTunes. You can just get a torrent or whatever it is you do to get music. And it is...
We do not pirate on this.
Oh, no. We would never endorse that. But of course. If other people do.
It's just on the table. But like...
No hard feelings.
It's surprisingly good. I mean, you know, it's definitely... worthy of a listen, you know, even if you're not really into that kind of music. As far as film goes, I mean, I've just been going back to older films like Spaceballs and the older Mel Brooks comedies. I mean,
I love Spaceballs.
I'm going to just pimp out Spaceballs today because I'll tell you why. I picked it up on Blu-ray recently, and whenever you watch a movie on Blu-ray that you haven't seen in like 5 years,
yeah.
It's a completely new experience. And I was laughing from beginning to end of Spaceballs, a movie that was made in the 80s, and I still think it's the best Star Wars spoof to date.
Yeah, it's a pretty good spoof.
It's not a movie that nobody's heard of or anything. It's not like I'm recommending some obscure title, but...
The Spaceballs, you say, huh?
Yeah. It's just... Yeah, yeah. No, but it's actually completely worth it, again, if you can find it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot of the effects that look really good, too, and just the costumes and whatnot, you know, just...
How does Rick Moranis look in 1080p?
Oh my god. He's
beautiful.
Awesome. That helmet is beautiful. Yeah.
He looks like an angel.
Cool. Yeah. So for this week's first ever Geek Peek of the Week, we're going to listen to the remix of the Daft Punk Tron Legacy soundtrack and also rewatch Spaceballs.
On Blu-ray.
On Blu-ray, if possible.
Yeah, if possible.
Awesome. So you got that, Wes?
I get it. Next week, I'm already writing it down. I'm watching Spaceballs right now.
So next week we will discuss both of those. Awesome. Thanks, Peter. All right. So now we're going to move on to our full-length discussion of this week's release of Super 8.
All right. Strap in.
Buddy.
Here we go.
Strap yourselves in. Here we go.
This is going to be a doozy. All
right. So I guess we'll start
There's
off.
There's already so many lens flares in here.
It's the first ever audio lens flare.
I don't even know what that sounds like.
No, but so... I guess we'll start off just by, hopefully everybody's seen Super 8 by this point. Just so you know, we're going to leave our description of the movie, our review, spoiler free until the end. But as much as we can, we're going to leave it spoiler free. But for those that haven't seen it yet, Super 8 is the new movie directed by J.J. Abrams, who directed Mission Impossible 3 and the reboot of Star Trek. It's produced by Steven Spielberg. And it stars Kyle Chandler, who was Coach Eric Taylor on the Friday Night Lights TV show, which I highly recommend, as well as Joel Courtney, who plays the main character in the movie. It's his first acting job, and we'll go into how good or bad he did later. But yeah, the plot of the movie is a bunch of kids get together, and they're making a zombie movie, they witness a train crash. And within the train crash, something escapes from the train and starts wreaking havoc on the town that they live in. There's a lot more to it, but that's the basic description of the plot. So I guess we're going to start off with our spoiler-free thoughts and reactions to the film. So we'll start with Peter. What did you think of Super 8?
I thought it was somewhere between being a really good movie and a great film, and... There's a lot of praise to hand to Super 8 and J.J. Abrams for what he's done here. There's a lot of Spielberg influence going on. There's a lot of throwback to even the Goonies, stuff like The Gate and E.T., obviously. I mean, I don't even need to mention that. The kid kind of looks like Elliot from E.T. The problem I had that held it back from being a great movie like Star Trek and Cloverfield, I thought, was... There were certain mechanisms that were put in this movie that I have seen recycled over and over and over again, and this is a pretty original film, but we get to, for instance, the cop, and this is spoiler-free, I promise, the cop takes two steps forward, he takes another step, and something loud happens, and then somebody hears a distant sound in the background, and then something really loud happens, and it was just, that is kind of something that, when you know exactly what's going to happen next... I feel like it takes away from it a bit, but there's a lot of big surprises as well, so it doesn't completely destroy the film. But also, any movie that takes place in the past, there has to be the daughter that wants to dress slutty, and the parents say, no, you can't go out like that. That's always in these movies that take place, like, you know, three generations ago or so. So, aside from the little stuff like that, though, I really did think it was, you know, a pretty impressive achievement from Abrams.
Yeah.
But,
Cool. I guess that we should also mention that the movie is trying to evoke, I guess, a lot of the old Amblin movies, like The Goonies, like Peter said, like The Goonies, like E.T. Just wanted to note that. Joe, what did you think of the movie?
I agree with Peter. I think it was definitely, it's in that middle ground. I loved it. Like, I really sat down and, like, enjoyed it. Like, I loved, like, the Goonie throwback and stuff like that. I felt like that. The one problem I did have with it was, and it's not really a problem, maybe it's just, like, would this movie have the same effect if it wasn't, like, a period piece? Like, what if it was set today's dates? Like, the kids are making a zombie movie, but instead of, you know, an 8mm camera, they got a, you know, their iPhone or stuff like that. I feel like maybe because it was set in the 60s, it felt more real, like more like Goonies and like that, but if it was set in today's era, would it still be as good? Would we think it's as good as it is today? You know, understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No,
but yeah, sense. And then my other problem will be with in the spoiler section because I don't want to say it now.
Right. Cool. Yeah.
I almost have a feeling. What
yeah. I think I know what you're gonna say. Yeah, we can also discuss afterwards what you just said. Does the time period of the film make our view of the movie different? But Wes, why don't you say what you thought of Super 8?
I'm trying to bite my tongue right now because I have so much to say to what they just said. But to me, Super 8, easily best movie so far this year. It really, like, and I said this to a few people, and I mean, I'm just going to rave about this movie because watching it, and I was just completely caught up in the whole thing. And the emotion worked. All the performances were great. And, I mean, this type of a movie is the reason I love going to the movies. Like, we don't get enough of this type of thing. To have a movie like this and have it work so well is a really special thing, especially in a summer where last week all we talked about was sequels. All we talk about is superhero movies. All we talk about is 3D. And people complain and complain about things being reused. Even though Super 8 is somewhat of a throwback, it's just such an original voice doing this and doing it so well with a love going towards it that we feel when a filmmaker makes a movie that he truly cares about, you can tell when it's on the screen. And you can tell J.J. Abrams really loved what he was doing and wanted us to love it. And, I mean, I was totally caught up in it. And, I mean, Super 8 is the movie to beat this year for me. And I'd say better than anything that came out last year also.
Wow, that's definitely high praise. We can argue about that in a minute. all right, so here's my thoughts on Super 8. Just a little bit of background. The movies that it is trying to evoke, I love to almost no end. Literally, movies like E.T. and The Goonies are the reason that we're even doing this podcast, or soon to be other things that are going to be happening with the Geek New Wave. But they have influenced my life to no end. Steven Spielberg's movies from the 80s and stuff are literally the reason that I can call myself a geek. So I wanted to love this movie so, so bad. I was so excited for it. And I can't say that I did. I liked it. I thought it was ambitious and almost entirely successful. But I have a lot of problems with Super 8. And that's not to say that I didn't think it was a good movie. It is a very good movie. But once we get into spoilers, I'll talk about what I thought the issues with the movie were. It's more than just an issue with... we'll get into it in spoilers. But again, I liked it a lot. I did think that there was much more ambition put into the movie than your typical summer movie, which is refreshing. But overall, I don't know if it was a complete success. But we'll talk about more of that later. Yeah, so...
Let's just die.
Yeah, so...
I did.
Let's just die.
Yeah. Sorry to deflate your dreams, Wes.
I'm hurting real bad over here on the other coast.
I cut him real deep. Shrek. Anyway. Yeah, so before we move on to spoilers, there are some other topics that we wanted to talk about that are relatively spoiler-free. So we're going to discuss those first. The first thing that I wanted to talk about was, for anyone who paid attention to the Super 8 marketing and ad campaign, they left it very, very secretive. They did not reveal what the thing that was inside of the train was at all. And that's kind of something that J.J. Abrams has done quite frequently with this stuff. He, if anyone's seen his discussion from TED, which is a technology conference, he talked about the value of mystery. You can find that on YouTube. Look it up, J.J. Abrams Mystery Box Talk. But he definitely appreciates the value of leaving things unanswered so that we don't know going in. And it does add a freshness to most of his things. I don't necessarily know how I felt about it here, but we'll talk again about that later. But yeah, what do you guys think about, like, what is the value of keeping, like, as much of the ad and marketing campaigns as spoiler-free, as mystery-free as they can be? Peter?
Oh, I thought it was great. We had no idea Super 8 was going to be a Godzilla movie. And I'm just kidding. If you're listening, that was a joke. It's not a spoiler. It really adds a lot, I think. It worked with Cloverfield. I think it worked again with this. And you've seen this in the 90s and movies in the past where, you know, I was joking about Godzilla, but that was very effective in the marketing when they did that, when you had no idea what the new Godzilla was going to look like. I mean, people were pretty excited up until
the toy
they showed it in the rain and the dark and you couldn't see it still. Yeah, that was kind of a mess up there. But, you know, I think it was effective this time around because without giving any spoilers again, if you saw the thing that escaped the crash is what we're referring to it as, that would have been a totally different movie to go into.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
like,
totally.
That would have just... Because there is, like... Well, again, I guess without giving spoilers away, you know, it would just would have been a different movie altogether. It wouldn't have had the same impact at all. I mean,
I think it's a definitely it's a double-edged sword with that campaign is because like you don't know what's going in, so you're eager to see what is this thing, what's going to happen. I have all these questions, but I feel like people like us, that's why we go see the movie. Mm-hmm. But there are those dumb moviegoers out there who's like, I want to see it. I want to know what I'm getting myself into. I don't know what accent that was. but it's like, yeah, and I think
that was Southern Alabama.
Yeah, so I think that also might stop people from going to see it because it's all like, well, tickets for movies are very expensive and it's hard to get people to go to the movies nowadays, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So I think if, you know, you lay everything on the table and be like, this is what we have, people will be like, oh, well, I'll go see that. But saying like, it's this, and it might be this, and it's all secrets and stuff like that, then no, I don't think people will go see it.
You're right, and I think the first super, no pun intended, extreme example of that is this whole, is Ridley Scott doing Alien 5? I mean, that's got to be the most confusing, is it or not, the Alien movie. Like that,
I agree.
And if they
it is an Alien movie, because they wouldn't be throwing that question around so much if it wasn't.
I hope you're right. I if you're right, oh my god, I'm going to be so happy. But
it's got to be. Why make all the... I mean, it's like with any advertising. Why make such a big deal about it? Maybe it's not. You know it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't really want to turn this into a Alien 5 conversation.
No.
But no, I see what you... It's a good point. I think that secretive ad campaigns can be effective for sure. Not in the way that this movie is, or Cloverfield was, or Godzilla was. Like at the very least, with like Cloverfield and Godzilla, like in movies like that where they don't show the creature in question. Like I would say that arguably, like, in every situation where a movie does that, it's because the creature does not look that cool. But I'm not going to say if that's the problem with Super 8 or not. But at least with Cloverfield, like, I really like Cloverfield, but I think the design of that creature is not its strong point. Godzilla kind of weak. But anyway, what I do love is when movies do not reveal all of their money shots and important moments in a trailer. That's what I think more filmmakers need to do, and I think Super 8 successfully did it. Like, they show some things, but there was never a moment where I was like, I've already seen this. So it's successful there. Like movies like the movie that we reviewed last week, X-Men First Class, literally show things in their trailer that like the best moment of that trailer was when he lifts the sub out of the water, Magneto, and that is a huge part of the movie that I wish I had not seen, because it took a lot of tension out of that scene of the movie. And there's so many movies that do that, just show all of their best moments. And you understand why they do it, because those are the flashy moments that will get people in the seats, but it takes so much away from what you watch in the theater, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it's hard with, like right now, with Harry Potter. I mean, those books have been out forever, so most people have read them, but the final Harry Potter trailer, I'm not going to say what the shot is, but there's a shot in that trailer that reveals a very big moment. Mm-hmm. That takes place near the end of that book. And I remember seeing it in the trailer and going, well, I mean, I know what that is, but even if you haven't read it and you've only been watching the movies, you can tell what that is, and it gives away something that's pretty big.
I haven't even read the books, and I think I know what, like, shot he's talking about. Because like, I'd be like, yeah, I remember watching that trailer and be like, this looks very important, and I can't believe they showed this.
I hate it when they do that in movies. I have this memory that the trailer for Jurassic Park did not show too much of the original Jurassic Park did not show too much of the dinosaurs. Is that true? Does anyone know that?
I think that the shot of the eye shrinking in the flashlight beam was in there.
Yeah. That was it.
But you never saw like a full like shot of the T-Rex.
I feel like you didn't see the full T-Rex.
You saw. I think there was. I feel like you saw some of the. I think you saw the raptor, and I think you saw some of the other dinosaurs when
the
they first.
Long bronchius or whatever.
When they first get there, I think they show you a glimpse of that. But yeah, I don't think they show you.
I don't know. Interesting.
To your point about showing too much, I always think of that damn Con Air trailer where they show the plane crashing into Vegas in the trailer. How could you, like, as you're watching that movie, you know exactly what's going to happen at the end.
It's kind of ridiculous. And, like, recently, there's that trailer for the movie Warrior, which we actually discussed earlier, but it's the Ultimate Fighter movie with Tom Hardy.
It looks pretty good.
It looks good, but the trailer shows the entire movie. I guarantee, like, it literally is like, this guy was a fighter and he was down and out, and now him and his brother are going to train, and then but will they match up at the end? And then it shows them matching up at the end. Like, what, going into that movie, like, I'm excited for it, kind of, but what element of the story don't you know? Like, they literally show the ending, I guarantee you, in that trailer. It's kind of
weird.
Well,
I mean, the same thing kind of goes with the fighter. I mean, like, when the fighter was... All the trailers, it's just that type of movie. We already kind of know what's going to happen anyway. It's kind of hard to advertise it and not.
No, but the difference is the fighter is real life, so that's fine. This movie is an original story, Warrior, and yeah, all right, maybe in a movie like that, you can always assume that, of course, he's going to match up with his brother in the ring, but that doesn't mean that they couldn't have written the movie where one of them gets, like, severely injured and they don't match up and then the fight is for the honor or something like that.
Did you just describe the plot for Kickboxer?
I might have described the plot for Kickboxer. You just described it. That's awesome. It's kind of obvious that they're going to match up, sure, but it didn't need to be obvious. Like, I could have went in thinking in my head, maybe it won't happen, but now I just know it's going to. So, I don't know. I really think that more movies need to try and at least dwindle out, like, showing all their great moments. I hate it when they do. But let's move on. So I wanted to discuss, like, since this movie is so highly inspired by classic 80s movies, specifically E.T. or The Goonies or Stand By Me, just, like, what are some of our favorite movies from our childhood? Just quickly, I don't know. Joe?
I don't know, like, after I watched Super 8, like, I felt like I wanted to go home and watch Monster Squad, like, right away.
I thought of that, too.
Like, I love Monster Squad. That was, like, I love The Goonies, and I love, you know, E.T., but, like, I remember as a kid, like, I always had to watch Monster Squad. Like, that movie was just amazing to me.
I've never seen Monster Squad.
What?
Monster Squad is The Goonies with monsters.
Yeah.
Like, the classic monsters. That sounds
really
good.
Like, the classic universe
with,
monsters.
With, like, Frankenstein and the Mummy and the Wolfman and the Creature. It's awesome.
I'm in the goddamn Clone
Order. I gotta see that.
And it is a lot like Super 8 too, because they, like, the kids kind of swear and stuff. But Peter
definitely reminded me of. I mean, I thought of Monster Squad and I thought of The Goonies, E.T. The Gate is another one. I mean, that's a little edgier where he stabs the eyeball in his hand. Like, I don't know if it went that far in any of these other ones, but there, you know, for some reason I was thinking of Gremlins. Like, I was just thinking of, I don't know why, like, it's not a bunch of kid, like, little kids running around, it's more people in their 20s, but it still has that same sort of charm and, like, that sort of, you know, the really town feel to it. Like, you get real comfortable with the town and, like, just the location and the people, and, you know, and that's, I guess, set in the 80s too, but, you know, mainly the stuff we've mentioned, it really wanted me to go back. I just wanted to rewatch those.
Wes?
Well, I mean, all those obvious movies influenced Super 8, but one of my favorite movies as a kid, it's another Spielberg, obviously another new Super 8, but I love Hook.
I love
Hook so much, so, I mean, that was one that I watched a lot as a kid, and then Jurassic Park was the other one that's all I watched. So it was basically Hook and Jurassic Park and then old Disney movies.
What about Shmi?
I'm the same. I walked out of that movie wanting to watch The Goonies right away, and E.T., like, and even Back to the Future, there was elements that reminded me of that, especially, like, there's the scene in Back to the Future when, like, they're in his house eating dinner, and, like, they want to watch, they're watching TV, and, like, you know, Crispin Glover has that, like, obnoxious laugh, like, that scene at the dinner table reminded me exactly of, like, scenes at the dinner table in Super 8. I was like, that's Back to the Future. But yeah, so, I mean, all those, it's funny, like, almost every single one of those movies somehow involves, that we just discussed, somehow involves Steven Spielberg, either as producer, executive producer, or even, like, Monster Squad would not exist without the Goonies.
Which he produced. Spielberg.
Yeah, exactly. So it's funny that he produced this. It's so clearly a homage to Spielberg. But we have all these movies that, like, we watched as kids that we just discussed, but I left the theater, and even, like, going into the movie, just wondering, like, what movies do the kids of today, like, hold in that sort of reverence? Like, do they have movies, like that nowadays? I don't know. Like, what do you guys think? Like, what movies today do kids, like, hold near and dear to their hearts like that?
I honestly don't. I feel like there isn't. I don't know, maybe because, like, I'm not a kid and I can't see through their eyes anymore. I feel like maybe Super 8 will be.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just don't know.
I think you touched on, like, the Spider-Man movies. If you were, like, 6, 7 years old and you saw one or two, that would be pretty awesome,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I just think that, I mean, back then we had people like Spielberg and Richard Donner and them making smart movies that they knew could be for kids, but they can also be for other people. And, I mean, today I feel like, I don't know, just with the way this generation is, or the way, like, how Nickelodeon and things have changed, that they've really dumbed stuff down for kids. I mean, right now, the kid movie out this week was Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer. How is that ever going to hold up for more than... I mean, it's never going to hold up, and they just throw these things out there. I don't think there's as much respect for kids today as they might have had for when they made the Goonies. And they're like, oh, look, let's have these kids be able to say bad words. Let's have them go on an actual adventure and something a kid will actually want to watch. And today it's all just about make a toy out of it, make it really quick, ADD, big flashy colors and things like that.
Yeah, I agree. I had a really hard time trying to figure out what movies I thought would kind of have the same effect. I agree that the superhero movies are something that kids are going to love, but it's not the same. Maybe the closest thing that I thought would maybe have the same impact was the first Transformers movie. I think that if you were a kid, like maybe, yeah, like 6 or 7, right when that came out, I can't imagine anything in the world like being cooler than that movie.
Yeah.
And like in that movie, Shia LaBeouf is still kind of treated as a kid.
Yeah.
Like there's all that stuff in the beginning with him at school, him with his friends, like talking about girls, and like I feel that that movie had a lot more Spielbergian influence than maybe the sequel did. So that could be one. I think that the Pixar movies will be movies that kids, myself included, but kids will always kind of love. Kind of surprisingly, like I work in an area where kids are all the time, and I see kids wearing Karate Kid shirts all the time. Like the remake of Karate Kid from last year. Like,
really? It's a good movie.
It is a good movie. So like it's better than it should have been. I feel that like I liked it. Kids clearly like it. I literally see the shirt all the time. That could be a movie that shockingly like becomes one that they like.
Yeah, I mean,
like how we hold for the original Karate Kid, that could become theirs. And then kind of like a wild card is like if kids saw it, and I'm not sure that they did, but from 2006, the animated movie Monster House.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great movie. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that could totally be for at least like a select group of kids. That could totally be a movie that.
That could be like their Monster Squad.
Yeah, kind of is like their Monster Squad. And
probably... I was also thinking... Oh, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say about...
I was thinking... I mean, I don't know if it really worked the way it was supposed to for kids. I really, really enjoyed it, and I thought that if a kid saw it, they could, is Where the Wild Things Are. But yeah. I don't know if that's really going to hold up for a little kid to have seen. I feel that might have almost been more for us, but, I mean, for a strong kid movie, I thought it worked.
I think what's cool is they also caught the end of the new prequel trilogy to Star Wars. And, like, in my opinion, you know, Episode 3 is the best of the new trilogy. Yeah. So I feel like they definitely got hit at least with Episode 3, which is a good place to start, like, if you, like, or have to get into the prequels, you know?
I agree there. The one little thing that I wanted to mention about Monster House was... not shockingly enough, it was executive produced by Spielberg. So, and then I also kind of thought that maybe kids, if they caught it at the right age, the first Men in Black could be another movie like that. Maybe. But
we were kind of kids for Men in Black.
Yeah, we were kind of kids. I don't know if they saw it. I asked my little sister, who's 11, this question, like, what movie she thinks she would still love, and she just said movies like The Goonies and stuff that I showed her.
Yeah.
So it didn't really give me any kind of a feedback, but...
Well, you're a cool older brother.
I guess so.
I wish you were my brother, Stone.
Yeah, so I guess... cool, so... we're going to kind of move into our spoiler discussion now of Super 8. Mm-hmm. So anyone, I guess, who hasn't seen Super 8, just kind of pause this episode, go watch it, and then hit play.
Yes.
Yeah, do not listen.
Do not listen to this.
No. This is about to get heavy.
Cool. So we're going to move into spoilers now. If you're going to exit the show, I want to say thanks for listening now. I think that we all recommend Super 8 for sure. Some more than others. But all right, so cool. We're now officially in spoilers.
You were in spoilers.
Okay, my one issue with the movie, and it was really my only issue, is why does the mom work at a steel mill, and how could she have died?
That was your only issue?
That's that.
No, I really I did not have that many issues with this movie. I loved this movie, but I was just, and I mean, I know that mom had to be dead.
Yeah.
But you just look at, like, Elle Fanning's dad, and he's like a tough guy. Kind of thing. You work at a steel mill. Where is that mom working in the steel mill where she's going to get smashed by a beam?
Yeah, it's even further than that. It's you look at Elle Fanning's dad, and he's a tough guy, and she took his shift, meaning they did the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were both welders.
That was my
I did feel like, I felt like the mother thing was kind of like thrown in there, and like and I think the way they killed her, like, they needed, like, she was crushed to death, and it was like they needed this have that. Like, she could have just, like, died.
Yeah. Like, I feel like with that death, like, I think it was pretty clear that it should have been the dad that died in a steel mill. But I think that it's very 80s movies for the mother to be the one that's around, and I think that Abrams wanted it to be the other way around.
Yeah.
I think of E.T., like, and even Close Encounters, like, with the little kids, their dad isn't present. It's the mother that is. So, kind of, I don't know. I don't know why he chose it to be a steel mill. That did bug me as when I was watching it. But that was not the only issue I had. I'm gonna say not my biggest issue, but the alien sucked, I thought. I thought that it had a cool, like, facial expressions, but the design of the alien was like, what? That's what it is? Come on.
But look, at this point, I mean, you got Cloverfield, you got Godzilla, you got these things. I mean, we're always like, oh, we don't want to see the monster. Are we ever going to be satisfied?
But yeah, that's the thing. Is like, Godzilla sucked. He looks stupid. Cloverfield looks stupid. This monster looks stupid. Like,
I think the issue is J.J. Abrams keeps using the exact same guy to design his aliens. Like, Cloverfield looks just like the monster on the snow planet in Star Trek. And
that is true.
This thing is very similar as well. Like, it's the same guy that designs it, and I just don't like that design. I don't know, maybe people have it.
Yeah.
But that was not my issue. Like, I didn't like the design, but that did not take me out of it. What took me out of the movie was J.J. Abrams was trying to evoke all these movies. The Thing, Halloween, E.T., Close Encounters, The Goonies, Monster Squad, whatever. All those movies. But you know what all those movies don't have? Creatures that look like crap because they're shitty CGI.
Yeah.
Why didn't he make the alien practical effect? It makes no sense. That CGI will not hold up in a year, let alone... It doesn't hold up now. It won't hold up in a year, and it's going to look dead terrible in 10 years.
I guess I'll defend one thing about the design. When I was sitting in the theater and I was seeing it for the first time, I thought, you know what? This thing could work its way through the exit door, come into this theater, and start picking us off. And, like, it, you know, at least the Cloverfield monster would have to, like, take the roof off. We'd have time to scatter. We could, like, hide from it, you know? Yeah. And I like the idea that maybe you're right about it being too much CG, and that's a big problem with films these days. At least have both practical and CG mixed together. But I like that it could get into smaller spaces quickly, like the bus. We're in the spoiler zone, whatever. Yeah. So, you know, like, the way you can get in the bus and other areas like that, that was kind of freaky because I never felt safe.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean about, like, how they could have maybe spent a little bit more time getting it to look a little bit different than what you had seen from Clover. Because I was thinking Cloverfield a lot, like just the design of it.
Again, the design of the creature didn't bother me as I was watching. It was the CG that bothered me. I mean, what do you guys think? Like, why doesn't any, especially in a movie that's trying to evoke that era, why not do what they did that worked so well?
Money.
Well, I mean, look at what the monster was doing in that movie, though. Kind of hard to have a practical effect there. I mean, really, the only part I can see where there could be a lot of big practical effects is maybe as it lifted the kid off the ground when they were down in the tunnels.
Right.
Maybe some of the bus with a close-up, but I mean, the rest of it, it's a big creature.
But that's my thing. Like, why did it have to be a big creature?
It didn't.
Like,
it wasn't that big. No, it was like 10 feet tall.
I'm just saying, but like, in my mind, when I was watching Super 8, like, I'm thinking maybe, like, we're gonna get twisted here and it's gonna be, like, a guy who got experimented on with the military. An alien that looks like us or something like that. And then it kind of had some. But then when I saw the big giant Cloverfield monster baby, I was like, it was cool. I was like, okay, that's the monster does look a little cool, but he kind of looks dumb. But I like
that he was more of an intelligent creature, though.
I did like that a lot. Like, he was. But, like I said, like, yeah, like, I'm just tired of. Like, so the next J.J. Abrams movie that we're going to get a big, giant, stupid monster?
Like, is that looks kind of like the last movie.
Is that going to be his calling card for every movie now?
Star Trek 2 is going to have
CGI. The CGI was not good. But
maybe just for the monster, but the rest of the effects in that movie were. Good. That train crash is...
The train crash looks good.
You know why a lot of it looks good? Because it was practical effects. Like, there's parts that are CGI, but it's intermingled with practical effects. Real explosions, real things falling on the ground. I don't know. I was disappointed because I thought that Abrams understood that... I don't know. But my biggest issue, period, with the movie was it does not earn that ending. Why are we supposed to be happy that that thing leaves the planet? How does it earn that? Close Encounters ET moment of the thing?
I don't think that it does. I don't think that's the point of that ending. It's not about the alien in the end. Yeah, the alien's getting away, but I mean, we're taking this journey with the kid, and the kid has his moment with his father that totally worked for me in the end. I teared up. I'm admitting it right now.
I did too.
The dad getting out, hugging his kid, and saying, "I got you." That line, I was done. I'm a sucker for father-son stuff, but I mean, it wasn't that we were happy the alien was getting to leave. It was just that there it goes. They were able to let the mom go. It was the backstory, but I mean, the rest of it was being taken care of. I don't think anyone was happy that monster was going. The town was they were happy it was going, but
no. But the way that they play that scene with like the music swelling and like them showing the thing like climbing up, and the way that they shoot it, it so clearly evokes ET when he leaves. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like there's no reason that they couldn't have killed that alien. Like, that alien needed to die.
It would have had, like, a King Kong ending, definitely. Yeah, like, you would have ended up feeling sad for it.
I understand that, like, there's a part where, like, they say, oh, you know, it was captured against its will, and all it wanted to do was get home, and that's fine. And maybe if they had only had it kill like the army or the military, that would have been fine. But the thing like kills, like, brutally murders.
There's a scene where it's like eating a human's leg.
Yeah, so it does not earn that moment. It earns, the reason that I do like the movie and the reason that I think it is a very good movie and the reason I will buy it is because I loved all the stuff with the kids making the movies. I thought that the relationship between him and his father and that story arc was very strong, and it earns that moment. But for anyone that knows kind of the history of the movie, like the way that it was made, J.J. Abrams originally just wanted to make a movie about kids making movies, and then he had a separate idea for this alien thing, and then him and Spielberg were talking about both, and they decided to fuse it into one thing. But it's part of me feels that, like, at his heart, J.J. Abrams really just wanted to make the movie about the kids making movies.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell that's the stronger part of the movie. There are two movies going on, and there was one part that did kind of... It didn't throw me. I mean, obviously, it's my favorite movie this year, but I can't remember the exact moment, but it suddenly jumps, like, from the kids goofing around to a suddenly real monster moment, and it felt kind of jarring, because, honestly, the scenes with the kids shooting the movie are you're way more into that.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of... parts of the movie, like, it was like eating, like, dinner, and then in the middle of a bite of your dinner, you took some ice cream, and then you went back to your dinner. Like, it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
It wasn't, like, I don't know, like, that's the best way I can explain that. That
feels pretty right to me.
But, I don't know, I really, honestly, I feel that, like, he felt that he had to make a movie with monsters because he's J.J. Abrams and, like, people expect that. And I don't know if he did. I think it would have been just as great. They could have made it for probably $30 million less, and it wouldn't have mattered if it only made, like,
this movie had only a $50 million budget. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, you can tell by the CGI monster.
What I'm saying is, like, if he had just made the movie about the kid, like, it's a summer movie, so it has to make money, so you have to have a monster or whatever, I guess. But it could have been a movie that came out in the fall and was just a great movie about a kid overcoming the.
But if that's the case, then why not just give us Cloverfield 2?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would have seen Cloverfield 2.
The other issue I had, and it kind of pained me to say, because my favorite composer working today is Michael Giacchino, and he did the music to this, and I was very disappointed with the music in this movie. I don't know about
you
guys.
There was never a moment where I thought the music was bad. It certainly didn't become a big score like I wanted it to, except there at the end. In that scene, I think that music's great.
Yeah, I can agree.
Some of the music is okay. But, like, again, all of those movies that this is trying to evoke, literally every single one has a distinctive, memorable theme, and this movie doesn't even attempt at it.
Yeah.
That's true.
It was so lacking in a theme. I can't believe, I don't understand why they didn't do it. It makes no sense to me.
To your point about the juggling between monster and kids movie, when I walked out of the theater, I thought to myself, I proposed this idea that if he had spent about 10 to 20 more minutes focusing on the monster aspect of the movie, it would have been a better film, because the payoff, he builds this movie up for about an hour straight, and this movie is not even a two-hour film, and that we're counting credits and everything too. So the payoff is like about, he has what, 20, 30 minutes to really...
Yeah.
Here's the bus, here we go, it's underground, and then bam, it's gone. Yeah. And it's like, whoa, that's really fast. Now, I did think it was a really good, if not great, film, but that would have pushed it over the edge if he had balanced it. Because, like, the doctor said he had a connection to the monster, and then they never went anywhere with that. And I was like, ooh, that's going to be really cool.
And it's all those things that are the reason that I feel like it wasn't the movie that he wanted to make. And maybe, you know, I could be totally wrong, but I think at his heart, he just wanted to make a movie about the kids and the kid getting over the death of his mom.
Yeah.
I feel, though, I mean, right now, this is obviously a movie we've all been waiting for a year since we saw the trailer in front of Iron Man 2. And, I mean, right now, we got hit with the movie, and maybe you're disappointed, maybe you're not, depending on how you feel. But I really think that, I mean, Nick, you might not think the special effects are going to hold up, but that's going to be a movie you can watch in 3 or 4 years, and I think you're going to learn to love it more. There's a lot here to love. I mean, right now, we're really only pointing out the bad stuff. There's so much good in this movie.
Oh, yeah. That's true. We haven't even talked about the acting. Like, all of the kids are great. Just incredible, incredible finds. Especially the main kid played by Joel Courtney. Like, he is awesome. The cinematography in the movie is awesome. I mean, the movie is really good. But to counteract your point, like, in 5 years, I'm still going to be wishing that it was still just a movie about kids making movies and stuff. So I'm always going to regret that it isn't. I'm going to buy it. I did like it. I'm not trying to not recommend this movie. I'm just pointing out that it has flaws that need to be acknowledged.
No, go out and see the movie. The movie's
totally
amazing.
Everybody go see it.
Yeah. I mean, out of this summer and out of every summer that, like I said earlier, nothing but sequels, nothing but superheroes. I mean, I'm starting to get a little worn down with superheroes. I was just, even though, I think it's a great movie. I'm not going to backtrack. But, I mean, go see it and just see something different.
Yeah,
because it's gonna be it's gonna be the most original movie of this summer.
I agree with that.
I agree that it is very original, but at the same time, it is so clearly trying to evoke other movies. So,
but it's its own thing.
Yeah, I guess
you never feel totally forced. Like, yeah, you're like, oh, that's kind of like the Goonies, and like you said, Gremlins earlier. I remember there's an awesome scene in this movie where it's after the kids have gotten out of the bus and they're running through town and all the missiles and stuff are misfiring, and just these great swooping shots of everything exploding. It's an amazing sequence, and that kind of reminded me of Gremlins in a way, like when the town's just being overrun.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that like reminds me, oh, that's kind of like Gremlins, but I was never taken out of the movie thinking about those other things.
No, yeah, it's original to a point. what would have been more original is if it didn't have an alien in it. But, you know, whatever. I think that we're running a little bit long, so we should kind of wrap up.
Yeah.
One thing that I did want to note about the movie is it was number one this weekend, which is awesome. It made $37 million, which is awesome. People only had a peg to make like 25. But the thing that I wanted to really note about how awesome it is that it was number one is it is the first movie in 3 months that was number one that was not a sequel.
Wow.
The last movie that was number one that was not a sequel was on March 18th, Limitless. Every single movie since has been a sequel.
Wow, strange.
So it is refreshing that an original movie, was number one again, because it's kind of ridiculous that we've been so bombarded by sequels. But I guess we'll wrap up with everybody. We don't even have to. Everybody says see it. Just some people liked it more than others.
I really liked it. I just was pointing out the
problems. Yeah, I mean, I really like it too. It's just, I think if we're going to review a movie, we have to weigh the pros and the cons.
I feel like we weighed too much on cons, but all right.
Okay, well, it was the Wrath of Cons.
Great sequel.
But anyway, we're going to get going. Peter, thanks for being on the show. We'll have you on again soon.
Pleasure to be here.
Can't wait to check out the Tron Legacy remix and Spaceballs again. Excited for Spaceballs for sure. Unless anybody has anything else they need to say, we're going to get going for the day.
Right. Peter Dinklage is a midget.
All right. Okay, bye, everyone.